Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This episode of 12-Pack Radio is made possible by Nextiva, the official communications partner of the Pac-12, and the best business phone service is chosen by U.S. News and World Report. Nextiva helps companies all over Pac-12 countries stay connected with customers and coworkers using one easy-to-use app. Get Nextiva for your business to get business phone service, video conferencing, team chat, call reporting, and more, all for a fraction of what you would pay for those services separately. Make great calls every day. Visit Nextiva.com/12-pack to get started. Nextiva.com/12-pack. To get started.
Oh, South Kakalaka! Don't you dare be sour! Clap for your world famous two-time champs and feel the power! It's a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12-Pack Radio, get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12-Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news, the home of the Beta-Rank College Football Statistical Model. This is a Sharp College Football podcast, and I'm Brian Conger. Thank you for joining us. We continue to crank through our spring, almost at spring win totals because they came out today, Rob, but our spring questions so that we are prepared to knock out these college football Pac-12 win totals. We have a number of games whose lines have started to come up, and I'm fascinated by all of them. So we have plenty of, I hate the word content, plenty of subjects to talk to as we go through the Pac-12 offseason. I'm joined, as always, by Rob Bowron from Sharp College Football. How are you, Rob?
I'm good. I'm we're closing in. Reddit College Football pointed out there's only like 14 more Saturdays before we finally have a college football game.
That's awesome. 14 more. That's good. Which also shows that I need to get my act together at work. Yeah. At least half the year has already gone by. Holy goodness. Well, there is a lot of news to cover, actually, today. We have a couple transfer portal changes. We have our opening subject, Rob, which is fascinating to me and more fascinating because I don't really have a take on it. I'm just kind of curious where the chips will fall. And the Pac-12 made a major decision. Rob, you want to talk about what happened and let the fine people know where, what do you think it means for the conference?
Yeah, so the NCAA passed a bunch of different rule changes that have, you know, in this past voting cycle. And I think that was last week. And the one that's probably received the most headlines is the fact that you no longer have to have divisions to hold a conference championship game. Now, the Big 12 had an exception to this, but now you no longer have to divide off. Like the main effect for the other conferences, of course, is it means that they can do away with divisions, and many of them likely will. And there's already, you know, like on Sunday night, you know, some of the schedules, this is like future schedules, disappeared off the Big Ten website. But what is it was, so the Pac-12 was actually the first conference to announce, at least Power Five conference to announce, that they would be doing away with the requirement that you win your division to play in the conference championship game. In the Pac-12, you will just the teams with the two best conference winning percentages will, you know, play in the conference championship game. But there's a big assumption out there, and I think, you know, more so on in the Pacific Northwest, that this means the Pac-12 will do away with divisions because a lot of the other major conferences will. And it's a little more complicated within the Pac-12. And that is, you know, when, you know, in the gripe amongst the Pacific Northwest schools is because they are not only not in the same division as the two LA schools, but because of the agreement that UCLA and USC secured when the Pac-12 formed out of the Pac-10, USC and UCLA traded equal revenue distribution, which the old Pac-10 model had not been equal revenue distribution. They traded equal revenue distribution for a guarantee that they would be able to continue to play their traditional rivals in Cal and Stanford every year. So this means if you're in the Pac-12 North and you're not Cal or Stanford, you actually see you get to go to UC, you get to go to LA even less often than you would have under just a straight up divisional format without those rivalries. But this was something that like Pat Hayden, who was the USC AD at the time, really felt was important for USC. But it was a major concession that USC made. I mean, in particular, USC made for that equal revenue distribution. Fast forward now, and you know, a lot of the schools in the Pacific Northwest and fan bases are really pumped to potentially break up divisions and get to go to LA more often. You know, potentially the LA, you know, the Pac-12 for scheduling purposes would form into pods, you know, with like a Pacific Northwest pod, a California pod, and then, you know, a Mountain and Arizona pod. But it's a little more complicated because nowhere else in college football do you have a Los Angeles. So there's nowhere else in college football that has anywhere like the gravitational pull of Los Angeles and Southern California does for the Pac-12. Not just for recruiting, you know, part of Colorado and Utah joining the conference was that they have a huge alumni base in Southern California. The annual trips that those teams in the South make, the Arizona schools and the two mountain schools make, are huge fundraising trips where they go out and get in touch with alumni, you know. So it's a, and you have to have 9 votes in order to do away with divisions within the Pac-12. I think everyone's assuming this is going to happen, and I'm not saying it won't. I don't think this is something that the Arizona schools and the mountain schools are just going to trade away. And that's probably going to make it a little more complicated calculus wise. Like I would expect you would see the ACC and the SEC and the Big Ten, you know, and the Big 12 doesn't have divisions, but, you know, likely do away with divisions in the near future. It will just be a little more complicated in the Pac-12 because that chip that the Arizona and Mountain schools have right now, which is, you know, getting to go to LA every year is a really valuable chip. It's not, there's nowhere else in, I mean, you could maybe argue like the Big Ten in Chicago. I mean, the Big Ten has a huge alumni footprint in Chicago, but even that's not really that similar, you know. There's just nothing quite, because you don't recruit that heavily in Chicago if you're a Big Ten school. There's just nothing like LA in any other conference. And so it is an incredibly valuable thing that schools are going to have to sort of come to an agreement on. And I expect eventually they will.
Yeah, when you talk about some of the schools in the Pac-12, I mean, they always talk about, oh, we need to recruit Southern California. We need to recruit the Los Angeles area. I mean, it's just, it is a hotbed of excellent high school football. Some of the best quarterbacks in the country continuously come out of Southern California. You know, one of the things that I know is difficult is finding the offensive and more importantly, the defensive linemen, right? And that's usually not in California, but a lot of the skill positions, a lot of the quarterbacks, a lot of just the talent in general come out of Los Angeles. So that's really interesting to me. We'll keep an eye on that as the conference continues to evolve, which I think is a good thing. It just looks like the commissioner we have now is much more willing to shake things up rather than say my plan is the best way forward. So you, like, you know, get on board and I'm going to announce my raise from Las Vegas to the entire staff. So it's just nice to finally get away from that era. And we'll keep an eye on more changes that come out of the Pac-12. You know, Rob, moving into some other news before, by the way, we're going to talk about some regular stats versus some advanced stats here in another segment. We'll also do our previews or our spring questions for the Los Angeles schools, but I wanted to just tick through a couple additions from the transfer portal that have happened recently, because I think just with their landing spots for some of the top players is fascinating. Ricky Pearsall, who I think is a fine possession receiver. You know, when we were doing some research on ASU in terms of their wide receiving core, which is always fascinating because they had all of those awesome four-star, you know, players that committed to the program. And then Ricky Pearsall is like the player that everybody that was covering ASU was pointing to as being like the top wide receiver. So I thought that was a little worrisome. But a consistent player, he's gone from ASU and ends up at Florida, which I thought was interesting. Jermaine Lole, the defensive lineman who I think a lot of players were looking or a lot of programs were looking after, ends up at Louisville. So did not transfer in the conference, ends up going at a conference. I'm sure there's a couple NIL deals set up for him. Oh, yeah. Peter Castelli, the four-star quarterback from Utah, ends up at Troy. So that's interesting to me. Of course, Jordan Addison goes from Pitt to USC. We covered that last week. And I'm just looking through any of these other ones. Oh, LV Bunkley Shelton, you know, speaking of ASU wide receiving transfers, ends up at Oklahoma. So that I'm going to keep an eye on that because.
Yeah, that's the one to watch.
Yeah, because Shelton and Elijah Badger, that whole class, yeah, Chad Johnson's kid, you know, they have not produced on the field. And if he goes to Oklahoma and starts catching some passes. I mean, I think that coaching staff at ASU is already out the door soon because of the sanctions and all that stuff. But I think it's just more confirmation that either they needed a better offensive system, better coaches, because, I mean, I get it, right? Like stars matter when you have a lot of them, right? If you get a big recruiting class with a lot of high pedigree guys, you are more likely to be successful. I mean, that's just in the numbers. And so, but not every player that you get, you know, that's a four-star, five-star kid is going to pan out. But it is really worrisome that ASU got like six of them at the wide receiving core and like none of them have been productive yet. So something to keep a lookout for there. Anything else in the transfer portal, Rob, that popped out to you?
No, I mean, so the other big news for the rule changes, though, was that the oversigning rule, the Houston Nutt rule, which has limited classes to a 25-man limit, has been suspended for 2 years. And so if you are a coaching staff and you are looking, and this is interesting too, because like you, there was that article about how USC was able to basically sort of like cut guys as long as they were willing to offer them the ability to stay in school at USC with the full academic support and scholarship. You could basically cut players. And, but now with this rule change, like, you know, if you are, and there have been, you know, quite a few coaching turnover, you know, there's been quite a bit of coaching turnover in the Pac-12 of late. You can fill in the rest of your roster, from the transfer portal. So this is good. I mean, like there are a lot of guys in the transfer portal. Part of it is the COVID year of additional eligibility. Part of it is that a lot of guys first year, or first transfer. But this should help both clear out the portal and fill out roster depth.
Nice. Yeah. We'll keep a lookout for that. I know that initially these rules were put in place, right, to provide parity. So I'm actually more interested to see how people screw with this law to get an advantage rather than the actual intent in which it was put forward. But okay, well that's something to keep an eye out for. One of the things I want to talk to Rob here was we've completed our rosters, which is great. So and it's just in time, right? Because the season win totals from Las Vegas just came out yesterday actually. Maybe it was today. Anyway, in any case, those came out. We have some of the game of the year lines that have already come out. So I think we're in a position where we're really going to be able to start putting our nose to the grindstone and start actually figuring out, hey, which of these teams are not only going to be good, but you know might overshoot or undershoot their expectations because now we know what the expectations are. But as I was going through these, one of the things that I've always found interesting is how to break down the offensive line and the defensive line in terms of like the havoc that they're able to cause, some of the sacks or tackles for loss that they've been able to either prevent or couldn't prevent. And because it's just really interesting to me to see whether or not they can protect the quarterback, they can prevent defenses from coming in the backfield. The one thing, the problem with some of these numbers is that they're raw. So I thought this was kind of a good opportunity to bounce some raw numbers by you and to kind of see if what the numbers, the production of the offensive line, the defensive line from last year match up with some of your numbers that you have. So all that to say is I went through tackles for loss allowed and tackles for loss that were racked up by teams throughout the conference. And as I was doing this, some of the schools totally popped out because they were schools that I didn't expect to have either really good production or like terrible production. And I'm going to start with Washington State because the number there really jumped out to me because they were on paper a lot worse than I had anticipated the offensive line there. You know, you think of, even though it's not the air raid, like the run and shoot, you just think of a quarterback that's able to make decisions, you know, quickly to get the ball out, to get it to the right person, and to try to prevent tackles in the backfield. And when I was looking over at Washington State's numbers, this kind of really screwed with my mindset of them because when their future odds came out in terms of winning the Pac-12, it was like 33-1. And when we were doing our spring questions, we kind of looked at it and said, well, if you really squint, you know, you can actually see a Washington State team that could possibly compete for the Pac-12 in the North. And then I looked at these numbers. I'm like, oh man, this might've thrown a wrench in that statement. So tackles for loss allowed, Washington State allowed 6.77 tackles for loss per game. It's 106th, Rob, in the country. And then if you flip it on the other side, the tackles for loss given. So they only racked up 5.15 tackles for a loss, which puts them at 93rd. And that really jumped out to me because I, in my mind, had the offensive line as being a little better than that. And, you know, when we talk about the defense and Dickert's ability to, you know, make something out of nothing, I looked at that and went like, oh, wow, maybe they weren't causing the havoc that I had anticipated that they would cause. How do those numbers match up with the advanced stats? And is this an anomaly? Because your model, BetaRank, is taking a look at schedule strength and, you know, the teams they're actually playing. So I think it'll just add a little bit more context and clarity as we're looking at these teams as we start to do our projections.
Yeah, so negative drives is the one that's going to correspond closest to here. And it is disruptive plays, including tackles for a loss, but also turnovers and three and outs. And Washington State offensively was middle of the Power Five here. I mean, so there's a big opponent adjustment. You may allow a lot of tackles for a loss. You know, you may offset that. I mean, if you're still picking up first downs and not going three and out, it's not the end of the world, I guess. Yeah. It's not a great number, but it's not a bad number. I think for them, I mean, offensively, they were only at 36 last season on offense. I do think, and we've talked about this, I think their offensive line is going to be a better fit for the air raid than what they were doing with the run and shoot. You flip it around though, and the negative drives on defense is really good. They're at 18, you know, in the top 20 there. This was actually their best number. So it's not just tackles for a loss. They did a really good job forcing three and outs and turnovers. Some of that, of course, is aided and abetted by that game against ASU, where ASU really turned the ball over a bunch of times against them. But you know, this defense really relied on their ability to cause confusion and really force the offense to do negative. I mean, three and outs are really negative things. I mean, you got no field position essentially. And you give the ball right back, turnovers, you know, tackles for a loss. They did a decent job here, I think, all in all, when you look at what you might consider like havoc or, you know, like type plays.
Okay. All right. That makes me feel better because, you know, you watch these games, and I watched a lot of Washington State football last year, and I was like, oh no, what? That's why the advanced stats are important, because they highlight other things that aren't just tackles for a loss. But I was just, I like that measurement, because sometimes it lets you know, they were pretty bad at effective rush too, weren't they, this past year?
They were not. See, like they were a lot better against the pass. They were at 60 in effective rush, number 12 in effective pass. I mean, that jumps out and tells you something right there too, right? Like they were not often getting into the backfield, to stop the run. But what they did do pretty well was they did cover pretty well and cause coverage sacks and some, you know, and really slowed down offenses there. That's a real positive, I think, for them.
Yeah. And then the lack of production on the offense from the running game, I think, bears out a little bit there, where, you know, we were expecting really big things from McIntosh and Borgie, and we just didn't get it. So, okay. All right. I feel a little better. I still think it's a little shaky on the running game from the offensive side, right? They really need a better, but maybe they don't if they're just going to throw the ball like 70 times a game. So,
well, they apparently, after the last game, last time, our last conversation on Wazoo, I went and looked it up. And they're not like a full on Mike Leach, you know, air raid. They will throw the ball about 2/3 of the time, roughly. And so they are going to expect to be able to run the football. Okay. And they're going to need to, you don't want to be USC where you're calling a bunch of runs and then not producing.
Okay. Here's another one that really popped out for me, and we're going to cover this team next week when we do our spring questions. That's Cal. Actually, you know, I thought I was going to be down on Cal in this coming year. I think we'll have a longer conversation about this in the future, but I'm actually like, Cal is an interesting program to me moving into next year. And one of the things that was fascinating was I was looking at tackles for loss allowed, and Cal only had like 4.67 tackles per loss, which put them 18th in the country. And when you think of Cal, you don't think of like offensive lines that are really going to blow you out of the water. And I think that the offensive line coach that they got is more of a recruiter. But when I took up the raw stats, that number I was not expecting. You know, you like scroll down, you're like, oh, where's Cal? And I'm like, oh, snap, they're like in the first, you know, they're on the splash page. They're not like down in the bottom. So, you know, on the offensive side, what were the negative drives for Cal?
They were at 82. And so like a big thing with Cal is that they played a really easy schedule.
Oh.
They played the easiest schedule of defenses in the Pac-12 by a pretty good margin. So like Cal played the 90th most difficult slate of defenses in all of college football last season. The next closest Pac-12 team is Washington, who played the 67th easiest slate of defenses. Yeah. So like, I mean, Cal's a bit of an outlier in the Pac-12 is like having faced a really, really easy bunch of defenses. And then there, some of what you might see there with there is what they really, I mean, they really lacked in efficiency. They were at 121 in drive efficiency, but like there, you know, you have Garbers who can buy you some time with his legs. That's a decent number for Cal. It's something you could potentially feel like you could build on. I'm interested to see with the new quarterback coming in, if he holds the ball at all, because that was thing like Garbers could buy you some stuff with his legs and generally made good decisions and got rid of the football sometimes. Like, I don't know. we'll see if because, you know, an offensive line can pile up tackles for a loss in sacks, and some of those are on the quarterback too.
Oh, that's interesting. And they lose their two starting guards. That started for like 3 years. They also lose a couple of the guys on the backup front. So it'll be interesting to see what that offensive line was, but that worries me a little bit more, right? Because you look and you go, wow, Cal, okay.
Yeah.
Got an offensive line there. But you know, them being down in the 80s and negative drives on the offensive side also highlights, okay, maybe those numbers aren't as good when you actually take a look at who they're playing. One jumped out at me here, and that's Oregon State, Rob. Because when you take a look at the tackles for loss allowed, 3.54, fourth in the country. And my immediate confirmation bias comes up. And I'm like, aha, we know. We like Mihalcek. We like their offensive line coach. Were they that good, though, on negative drives?
Yes. And this is one of their best numbers. They were at 10 overall in negative drives. So not a lot of three and outs, not a lot of turnovers, not a lot of tackles for a loss. Like, they did a really good job here. You know, showing up and executing. I mean, of course, they have a really big run pass split, as well as they run the football, number 11 overall at effective rush. There's a lot to like, I think, about the way, and we're not wrong about the way that things work. Like, where they hurt, I mean, the things that like where Oregon State would have to improve is they just weren't explosive. Number 42 in explosive drives.
Okay, that's good. That's good, because I'm like, fourth, holy Moses. Like, you know,
yeah, that one showed up.
Yeah, and it looks like it, right? Because we just are big believers in that offensive line and just what they've been able to develop, and what he's been able to develop team after team. It's not just at Oregon State, it's been elsewhere too. So maybe they're giving all their defensive coordinator money to their offensive line coach, which, you know, in retrospect might be a good idea.
Wise. That is, if they're paying Mahalchuk extra money, then that is a wise choice.
All right, so right across the way here, Eugene, Oregon, and the number split here is fascinating. From a raw stats here, they were 10th in the country in tackles for loss allowed, just 4 per game, but they were 100th on defense in terms of tackles for a loss that their defense was able to collect at 5 per game. So I think this is the wildest split of any team in the Pac-12. Do those numbers hold up when you take a look at the advanced stats?
Well, it gets a little wonky it does on offense. They were pretty good at negative drives, number 23 there. They also played a pretty decent schedule of defenses. They were at number 16 overall in the set of defenses they played. So they weren't doing this against air for sure. I mean, and, you know, of course, getting Utah twice doesn't help. You know, I mean, it helps your strength of schedule. It doesn't help your feelings, I suppose you could say. Defensively, what the Ducks, now they did play and some of this is getting Ohio State and then getting Utah twice, is they played the number 5 overall schedule of defense or of offenses in college football for their defense. And that helps color their numbers. I mean, they're number 16 overall in negative drives. But so again, like, think of that as like, it's not just tackles for a loss here. It's, you know, turnovers. They were aided and abetted by Jordan McLeod
in a 5 interception game.
And then they were also pretty good at 3-and-outs. What they struggled with, the defense with DeRuiter last year struggled with, was drive efficiency. I mean, teams could just put together drives against them. I mean, Arizona drove the ball up and down the field against them. UCLA did it, and probably Dorian Thompson Robinson's best performance. They were decent. I mean, they really did a good job in a lot of phases last year, but they just couldn't put it all together, and they gave up a lot of points. That's certainly something that I think if you are an Oregon fan with, you know, Thibodeau going so high, the defensive line wasn't all that dominant last season. They really need a lot more of a sort of group effort. And of course, having linebacker, you know, they had some injuries. Absolutely. I feel like every time I say something in a video or on the pod, like, somebody's like, do you remember the injuries? I'm like, everybody has injuries. Everyone has injuries. But they've got to step up and, they've got to, I expect them to, I think a lot of the holes that Oregon had defensively last year should be cleaned up with what should be a new and better staff under Landing, bringing, you know, what he learned under Saban and Kirby Smart.
I just talked about Oregon's, split, but Oregon State also had the same split, right? They are 4th in the country, and then tackles for loss that were, you know, racked up by the defense were 4.92. They were 105th in the country.
They get a little bit of a bump. I mean, a very small bump from like playing a slightly better schedule than some of those like group of 5 teams. But they were at 81 in negative drives. They really struggled there.
The last team that was just interesting in terms of their numbers, actually there's 2 of them. So the first, let's talk about USC, because oh my gosh. And I think this is going to be the truth when we talk about the numbers here. So USC was 121st in the country in tackles for loss. That's insane. I mean, their defense sucked last year. We saw that. But oh my gosh, like, are you freaking kidding? But that's like bottom 10, right? Like, didn't there only 130 teams in the entire like Division 1? Is that fair when you take a look at the numbers?
Yeah, they were at 87 in negative drives last season on defense. They really struggled. Yeah, they were bad. I mean, they're at 70 in effective rush, 119 in effective pass. I mean, they were hideous last year.
Oh my gosh. And then with them, if you flip it a little bit, and I don't want to give them too much credit because 31st in the country isn't great. But they were 31st in the, which is like, right, we always talk about the 30s being the middle of Division 1 football. But one of the things that we have for a number of years been, it's always the but when you talk about USC is but their offensive line sucks, but their offensive line sucks. They were 31st in the country in tackles for loss allowed, about 5 per game. That's not bad. Does that bear out in the negative drives?
Yeah, they're 19 in negative drives last season, which is really their best number offensively. They struggled with drive efficiency. They just weren't consistent and couldn't put together drives to put up points.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, and we'll talk about USC. We'll give them that spring questions. I mean, they returned basically their whole offensive line. So if you want to have a base to work from, that's a heck of a base, because those guys should be better if they have better coaching. And they just brought in the offensive line coach from Texas A&M. So I think you actually have, you're a USC fan and you're saying, hey, we're going to compete for the Pac-12 in general, which I still think Utah is the favorite, but you can point there and say, all right, that should check off as being like, all right, we don't have to worry about the offensive line, which I can't believe I'm saying, because we haven't been able to say that for USC for like 5 years.
Yeah. Oh, no, I feel like people are way off. Like, I mean, the a lot of the comments when USC got Addison or that he didn't play offensive line. And I think people are off base there. Like, I just don't think they know. I mean, I just don't think that they really know what USC's problems are or were last year. I mean, the offensive line was a bit of a problem last year, but like the new coach should, as you and I know from having watched a lot of offensive line coaching changes around the Pac-12, and we just got done talking about a really good one at Oregon State, like a really good coach makes a big difference. And it's not as if USC doesn't have talented players, particularly, you know, they've recruited well in the trenches at offensive line. USC's real problems that we'll get into might be at safety.
Let's go. I love when a team has bad safeties, right? You just throw that tight end all day, every day.
Oh God. Like a tight end bend route where like the linebacker just kind of can't stay with them and the safety's like not doing their job. Yeah. That's,
I have a party hat and pom poms for every time a tight end gets like 25 yard, you know, big catch. So I just love it. It's like the best. Okay, let's last team, and then we're gonna actually break down some questions for USC and UCLA, and that's Utah. And I think both of these numbers are fine. Tackles for loss allowed 3.79, 7th in the country. And this jumped out to me because one of the bigger questions we had about Utah was the offensive line. I think some of this is probably, you know, like you had excellent running backs and you had Cam Rising who was able to run the ball. So I'm wondering if that covers for a little bit of it. But 7th of the country, even it doesn't matter because those guys return. Is that the production we saw in the advanced stats?
Yeah, they were number 5 in negative drives. Like that really does hold up offensively. They made some changes too. I mean, like under the radar, I mean, the big change, of course, that happened with that San Diego State game was the QB change. But they also did some shuffling. Nick Ford moved inside from tackle to guard. And that helped clean up. And I also think Ludwig just sort of threw out some of the stuff that they were trying to do. And, you know, you hate, like, it sounds funny to say it, but like he went with the plays that worked. Like he went with the plays for the players that he had.
Which were not the wide receivers, always. And then on defense, they were 25th in the country, 7 tackles for loss given. Is that roundabouts? It always struck me like the defense was pretty good at stuffing the run, but not necessarily getting in the backfield. Does that, you know, carry out with the kind of the havoc rules that you have at Beta Rank?
Yeah, they were at number 17 in negative drives. You know, they did a really good job there. They were really good against the run last year, really good in their run fit. You know, like with the linebackers, you know, and the defensive line really knowing their assignments and what they were doing. They were at number 6 in effective rush. And that's part of like why they were able to really shut down Oregon's offense so much, because Oregon's offense was truly a big play rush offense. Where Utah struggled, and I think this is like we talked about a little of this when we previewed them, is they're it's interesting because they do bring back Phillips, so I think it has the potential to be a pretty early draft pick. But outside of Phillips, they kind of stunk against the pass last season, 34 overall. That does put you in the middle of the Power 5, but that's not necessarily where you want to be if you're Utah defensively. They have some work to do in coverage and in getting to the passer.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, that's you know, if you have an Achilles heel like that and you have a good quarterback, that could be a problem. So
I mean, Caleb Williams, welcome to the crowd. I mean, like we said, like I feel like last year we were like, there are no good quarterbacks. I mean, like Cam Rising is like ended up, of course, being quite good. But this year, like you definitely look around and you're like not just Caleb Williams, Rising is of course back. And then Ward is of course intriguing at Washington State. You've got Penix at Washington. He was really good the last time, you know, he was reunited with his former OC in DeBoer. So it looks kind of fun in the Pac-12 for QBs for a change.
Yeah, Dorian Thompson-Robinson in his fourth year where he's not throwing the ball backwards anymore. Tanner McKee, right? Tanner McKee might throw it at, well, I mean, the wide receiving core for Stanford is good. They might not be able to run the ball for a lick, but he's pretty good. I totally agree with you. Last year, we were pretty bummed out about the quarterbacks. This year, I think the conference is going to be a lot stronger. So we'll keep a look on that. Okay, Rob, we're going. Well, anything else on those stats before we move on?
No, I mean, do check out. I mean, it's always useful to try to ground what you're seeing with some advanced metric. And so that may very well be just looking at the overall number, and then trying to break it down. But it is good to sort of you are going to have some teams that are outliers on some particular raw stat. And then you look at the rest of it and you're like, oh, but they're good at this. Why weren't they good at everything else? And they usually weren't.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why I wanted to check with you, because that makes me feel better again about my bullishness on Washington State. In particular, that's kind of one where, and to be able to confirm Utah had it on both sides. I mean, there was some ground they can make up in the pass defense, but it seems like they've kind of returned to their old ways in the trenches, and that's great if you're a Ute fan. All right, let's get to our spring questions for USC and UCLA, and let's do it right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 Whiskey declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're talking LA schools. We're talking LA schools and just two really interesting teams. We have UCLA coming off of a pretty good year for Chip Kelly. You know, I think there was a lot of pressure on him. I was not sold on his ability to finally produce, and he did. You know, it wasn't the best year, but certainly enough to be able to sign an extension. I was impressed with how they were finally able to move that offense, given their lack of talent at wide receiver, given their questionable, running backs. You know, Zach Charbonnet coming over from Michigan, was he going to work? The answer was yes, with a 5 exclamation points. And then USC, just a totally new team with a totally new coaching staff. And as I was looking through the transfers, it's like, oh, okay, that could work. Oh, that one could work. Oh, that, like, it was just kind of, you know, a lot of these teams, Rob, when you take a look at transfers, you go, I mean, maybe, but with USC, I really do. Like, they have some legit people that they're plugging into these positions. And if they don't work out, they still do have the blue chip talent that wasn't able to produce that they can throw in. So I just think that these two teams are definitely some of the most intriguing as we move into 2022. Let's start with UCLA. I think Dorian Thompson-Robinson in his fourth or fifth year, I forget what it is now, probably fourth, I kind of trust him now. I mean, I don't not with my life, but, you know, maybe with my friend's life, you know, you'll be fine. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, they took a pretty big step forward offensively last year. They were number 11 overall on Beta Rank. Now, they still weren't great throwing the football around, you know, number 43 in effective pass, but 6 in effective rush. And Dorian Thompson-Robinson, I think what often killed them, to your point, was the mistakes, right? Just the glaring, awful mistakes that he would make. And he's really cut down on those. Now he's not, I think, you know, like he's in, but he, and he was more dynamic in the running game than we had seen him, you know, in past seasons. So I like where UCLA ended up offensively last year. I think the one interesting thing to watch is, I mean, the staff got raided, but Justin Fry, their offensive line coach, is off to Ohio State.
Ooh, I forgot about that.
That's a big one. That's one of the ones when people are like, it's like, what's Ohio State going to be this year? I'm like, good. Like, they're going to be good.
Do you know who they replaced him with?
You know, I don't. I know who they, I know, and I made a bunch of snarky comments about their new defensive coordinator, but Tim Drevno? Wow. Really? I have not seen Tim Drevno in.
Oh my gosh, where? You're right. It's he was at Stanford for a hot minute.
Yeah.
Why does his name pop out for me though? Like it seemed, I mean, I know he's at USC for like a cup of coffee. He's real. If you take a look at the positions,
he was an offensive line coach with Harbaugh at Stanford. Oh. And he went with, and then he went with Harbaugh to the NFL.
Oh, you know why he jumps out is because people at USC thought he was trash.
Oh yeah. And actually then he went to be the offensive line coach. And he didn't work. Now he did not work out as the offensive coordinator at Michigan. I think was more of the problem, but yeah, like he did not he was only USC for 1 year.
Hmm. Well, he came back too. He did two stints there because he was there from 18 to 20. And you know why his name jumps out is because, Alicia like was just dunking on him over and over again. So that's interesting. I mean, it's an interesting name. We'll have to keep an eye on to see. I mean, and it's not like UCLA has recruited particularly well at the offensive line position. So I guess that's a question, right? Like, you know, I know John Gaines returns, Antonio Mafi returns. Are they going to have the line to be able to protect DTR? Now, he is able to go on the run when he needs to.
Yeah.
But I don't think he prefers to. Sometimes he does, which is kind of fun. I think.
I mean, I would say, though, like, despite him not working at USC, you look at that experience and it's mostly, you know, running the football well. It could work. Like, I mean, this is not like, I mean, this hire, you know, a guy who has both experience at the NFL and significant Power Five offensive line coach experience ain't bad.
My face right now is when I look at like a abstract expressionism painting. Like, I don't know.
What I don't want to do is like overreact to like 1 year at USC, because like as an offensive line coach at Stanford was really good, and he was, you know, he was mostly good at the NFL, I would think. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's it. We'll see if he's able to pull it out there. You know, my second question is in the passing game, right? DTR remains, but they lose Greg Dulcich, who was a walk-on tight end that, you know, Chip Kelly turned into a superstar. And they return Michael, Ezekiel. He came from Miami, like just this big, big tight end who has the body. And we all know Chip Kelly's love for walk-ons, but let's see if he's able to turn somebody that actually has like, you know, the talent on paper into somebody to catch the ball. They get Jake Bobo from, I think he came from Duke, Logan Loyola. I mean, like I'm looking at the wide receiving core and I'm like, I don't know about this, but like, but you know, can Kelly do some witchcraft and move the ball with a tight end that hasn't produced and Zach Charbonnet? You know, like maybe he can. I think that's one of the bigger questions of the Pac-12 this year.
I mean, they're terrifying at wide receiver. I mean, there's no other way to put, like, Duke was, I mean, like Bilbo may turn out to be fine, but Duke was god awful last year. I mean, one of the worst Power Five teams maybe ever. I think maybe only that, like one of those last Colorado years after John Embry actually graded out worse than this last Duke team. They lose Coda to Oregon. It just feels like, I mean, this is the one where it just feels like, man, UCLA really could have used, and maybe it's, you know, could have used some better recruiting to start with, But they really just could have used somebody through the transfer portal here more than like Bobo, right? Like, I mean, and I'll grant you, like, it's not the sexiest destination to transfer to if you're a wide receiver. You know, like you know they're going to throw – they're going to run the football. And when they do throw it, it's probably going to be the tight end. But you do kind of wonder, right? Like in a little bit like we talk about Utah, which is in some ways similar offensively. You know, without like the dimension that they will be missing and something that will keep them, you know, from reaching what their, you know, the full ceiling of an offense might be, is they're not going to have anybody that can really take the top off an offense or a defense.
No, I totally agree. I think one name to keep a lookout for, and I'm skeptical because he's been there for 3 years and I keep saying keep a lookout for him, is Kazmir Allen. Kelly went up and rated him from the track team. He's super fast. And who was the player that he got to the NFL a couple of years ago? He was part of that, the team that came back from like 70 points to beat Washington State in that one game. They put him everywhere. Like, I'm just interested to see if Allen can actually do that. But
Felton, he was so freaking good.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And he kind of came at it. I mean, like, he was a piece before Kelly was there, but Kelly turned him into a star. It's possible that that could happen with Allen. Like, he's that fast, but it hasn't happened it didn't happen last year. And I was really interested in him when he was a running back. It looks like they're going to move him into, like, I mean, I guess that's the case I'm making. They're moving him into that position that Kelly makes up. That's like, do whatever. We'll get you the ball somewhere. So
yeah.
That actually could be Allen this year. So keep a lookout for him. But overall, when it comes to the pass catchers, I'm curious to see what happens.
They might need like Jaden Marshall, who they just signed. So like, who's like 6'1", 180, he's a 4-star. They might have to have him come in and contribute immediately, you know, or, you know, that's their only 4-star wide receiver. After that, you know, they've got, you know, 1 3-star wide receiver in there. They might have to have, they got the guy from UCF too. He seems pretty light. 6'1", 170. That's gotta be his high school. I mean, you would think they would put his college weight. That's gotta be his high school weight. That can't be his college weight.
That's like me like minus 5 pounds and 2 inches. That's not good. That's not a good sign.
That's the problem. I mean, so they've got, I think they're going to be fine. I mean, I think the thing with Drevno is, though, is like, and plugging him in is like, it's mostly been working. And like Kelly's offense is like, I think it's okay. Given where you're putting him in what is largely a functional situation offensively, you know, and where you have guys that have had some good coaching already in place. I'm totally skeptical on like all, like what in the world, how are they even like, who is Thompson? Like, again, like it's all going to key off the run game and go to the tight end, but it's a little ugly for the pass catchers.
Kelly reminds me of like somebody on like a work team that just doesn't really have their act together. But when you really need them, like they'll go on the road and close like a giant sale, and then they'll just sit and do nothing for, you know, like he just the lack of effort. And then we're about to dunk. We've been dunking on him for years. And then he finally gets to that 8-win mark. And you're like, oh, I guess. I mean, I guess we'll keep him on staff. He does close, but hot damn, well, can't jump finally, on the phone. You know,
he got to 8 wins and finally fired Jerry Azzanaro. Like finally fired him. And then went out and hired Bill McGovern, who's like has Jerry Azzanaro's exact resume.
Okay. Well, let's flip over the defense here. My one question for the defense is what the F is this defense? But do you have any questions about the defense as you're looking at the roster?
I mean, I got a lot of questions. I mean, like, let's start with some of the players they took. I mean, like, cause like they did pretty well, I think, at like they got Jalen Jeffers out of the portal from Oregon at offensive tackle, but like they did a lot less well I think. I mean, I will say, now they did do pretty well. The two edge rushers they got out of North Texas, the Murphy brothers, those are pretty good gets. But after that, they got they got another player from Duke, Gary Smith. they got a player from Harvard. They got a guy, you and I saw him play in Houston a couple years ago, Azizi Hearn.
Oh.
Yeah, who was a walk-on at Arizona, transferred to Wyoming. And then played pretty well for Wyoming-ish, but like, I don't know if you remember this, that when he came in, Houston immediately...
Oh, they were picking on him all day.
Because after, God, I'm trying to remember that. Who's that quarter? He went to Miami. Who's that quarterback?
I know who you're talking about, but yeah.
But anyway, so Houston's quarterback loved to show, he had a nice arm and a nice deep ball. He loved to show it off. So as soon as Hearn comes in, they're like, oh yeah, like just deep balls. And he just kept picking on him. And I was like, oh, you know, when he transferred and went to Wyoming, I was like, that's probably a better fit. And now the UCLA picked him up, and I was like, wow, it's come to this.
That was funny because I saw that name. I'm like, where do I remember that guy from? So yeah, and like we have him as the starting nickel. That's not good. Like
this. No. I mean, great. You're like, now it's not going to be like full on, just like smoke if you got him, like that Houston offense where like Pat, like you know they're going to be like, oh, Hearn's in the game, time to throw nothing but deep balls. You know, but like he's not a guy that's going to give you a tremendous amount of confidence. This defense last season, I mean, as we talked about, it was finally enough to get Azanaro fired. They were at 58 overall. That was improvement for them, but that is still a very bad Power 5 defense. They really struggled with drive efficiency. You could put together drives against this UCLA defense, and they stunk against the pass, 69 in effective pass, but only 54 in effective rush. And that had been sort of their calling card, if you will, was that they were pretty stout up the middle in defending the run. I don't know. I mean, like when you go through this two deep, you know, you don't see anyone that you look at and you think, oh, you know, that guy has a potential to get drafted at nose tackle. Like there's nobody like that on this team right now.
Yeah. And I think if you're a UCLA fan, you're pointing to Jay Toya, who is the 4 to 5-star transfer from USC, but apparently in spring, he's not been the truth. Like he'll probably start, but he's not there yet. So it'll be interesting to see if he's able to jump in. But you're right with the Murphy brothers. It looks like they're going to see the fields fairly often. So I'm curious to see what they're able to do. Any other questions here for UCLA before we move to USC?
No, they're, I mean, I feel like at this point, like we sort of know what we're going to get. Like it's like, they should be pretty good next year. Like, you know, the defense has a shot to maybe be better because they weren't very good.
Okay. Well, let's go to USC. And I was looking at this team and man, I think the first thing to point out before I do questions is I don't think I've seen a unit go from like me being incredibly skeptical to me going like, holy crap, more than the wide receiving core for USC. I mean, look, I think Graham Harrell was a bad offensive coordinator. So it's possible that they just weren't making the most of the wide receivers they had. But when you take a look at where they were to where they are now, right? Like they just picked up Jordan Addison, and then you take a look up and down the roster. They got Mario Williams from Oklahoma, Brendan Rice from Colorado. Kyle Ford apparently is playing very well. Keon Ware Hudson, is also pushing. I mean, it's to the point like where Taj Washington, the transfer from Miami, and Terrell Bynum might not see the field.
Yeah.
And then you have Michael Jackson Jr. there, Gary Bryant. Like, this is an excellent wide receiving core. I have to like double check, right? So don't hold me to this, but it is certainly, if it's not the best wide receiving core in the Pac-12, it's one of the top three. And that's,
Who would you put ahead of them? They just signed the reigning Biletnikoff winner.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. I'm trying to look up and down because it might be Stanford. They're better than Stanford, so maybe they are the best wide receiving core. It's not Colorado. I think they are, right? Like Utah. Yeah. No, it's never. Don't ever say Utah. Oregon State didn't bring anybody.
No, yeah. they just come on. I mean, like, they got Addison. There's nobody in the Pac-12 that has anything like this anymore.
It's not even close. Well, the one, I just want to look at Oregon real fast. But they haven't produced that Oregon wide receiving corps. No, it's USC and it's not close. That's awesome. Right.
Yeah, I mean, and Mario Williams is a good get from Oklahoma. I think what's interesting when you go through this and you look is there's the real possibility that, I mean, because like outside of Drake London last year, most of the guys that were, you know, here with them last year were not very good. I think they have a real opportunity for those guys to maybe take a step forward. But if they don't, they have a bunch of guys who have either produced or were relatively highly regarded recruits somewhere else to play, you know, that if they went to, you know, if they were in a, just a, in a place where they're not doing a ton of rotations, like they're fine.
That's really, I mean, like, and then when you take a look at the, I have actually no questions on the offense, right? Cause you have the quarterback in place. You have the running backs, right? Like they were awful at the run last year. But you bring in Travis Dye, you bring Austin Jones from Stanford. You already have Darwin Barlow. Like, I think they'll be okay. They basically their entire offensive line returns. I guess the one question on offense is, can they run the ball finally? And we'll see if it was the offensive line or if it was scheme. I think it's scheme, Rob.
I think it's scheme. I don't think the coaching was great either. But like, I mean, I Lincoln Riley runs a very sophisticated rushing attack, you know, has the air raid on top of. So I expect this to be a very different offensive line. They made a really good hire on their offensive line coach. Getting the guy from Texas A&M. I think this offensive line has a shot to be a lot better, you know, than they were. So, I mean, I think people are too down on the offensive line and too down on the offense. Right. And they shouldn't be. Like, part of what made Caleb Williams work last year at Oklahoma versus Spencer Rattler was that Williams, like, he's mobile, right? You know, like, that was the problem. Like, Rattler's problem wasn't that he had gotten worse as a quarterback. His problem was that the offense had gotten a little bit worse around him. and they needed somebody like Williams who could buy time to make the offense work again. Williams is going to bring that skill to the table. You know, like, I think they're going to be fine offensively.
Yeah. I guess the only, like, the two questions I have would be, will they pick up the offense in the first year well enough to win 9 games? I think the second question is, can Caleb Williams not turn the ball over? Which, he had some stinkers last year.
Can he stay healthy? Because they got nobody behind him.
Well, they like Miller Moss. I mean, would Miller Moss start on like half the Pac-12 teams? No, but maybe Colorado. I mean,
sure, they like Miller Moss. Like, of course, like they have to say they like Miller Moss. If Miller Moss were to frickin' transfer, they'd be dead.
That's true. Yeah. There you go. Okay. So I think we're both like pretty. We're on the same page with the offense. The defense is where I am worried because they weren't good last year. And now they bring in Alex Grinch, and I don't know what to say about the, I mean, like, here's the thing is, like, you take a look at the players that are down as being the starters and you're like, I don't know. But then you look at the transfers, right? They bring in like Bryson Shaw, the Ohio State safety. They bring in Shane Lee, a linebacker at Alabama, defensive end Romello Height from Auburn, like Earl Biquette, defensive tackle from TCU. Like, some of these guys are going to work out. Mekhi Blackman, the cornerback from Colorado, who, by the way, they love. And it's, yeah. And you kind of just go, okay, but I don't even have specific questions about this defense. It's more just the defense in itself is a question. I don't know. Maybe you can articulate this better, Rob, but I'm staring at it and it's like, you know, like remember those 3D pictures where you had to cross your eyes to, like, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking at when I look at the roster.
So they really need, I mean, like, they needed a full defensive makeover, and I think they've attempted to get there. Right. And there's places that I think, you, like, here's where I think they are in decent shape for that. I think they're pretty good at corner. I like Latrell McCutcheon, and I like Mekhi Blackman. quite, I mean, I think those are two good gets for them. Now, that's not going to give them two guys that are like shut down corners. They're not going to be Alabama or Georgia level. They should be a lot better, right? And if you have Covington and Domani Jackson in the mix behind them, Domani Jackson, of course, is the five-star player they signed out of high school. You start to look at it and you can kind of squint and see like a decent enough, you know, like too deep, right? With, you know, with that. And they have some players, of course, that they are bringing back. Where I get worried is at safety, because they sucked at safety in the secondary. We talked about it a little bit. They were really bad. They were really bad defending the pass last year, this USC defense. They were at 119 in effective pass. That's a major problem for them, you know, and it is, it's, I mean, it like, you'd like the transfer in somewhat from Ohio State. I mean, I don't look at that one and think like, oh yeah, like that's clearly going to solve their problem. I think he's an interesting guy in Brian Shaw. I don't think he's he's not transferring because he's going to start on a Buckeye on the, you know, for the Buckeyes. USC is happy to take him. I think the linebackers are largely fine, right? Like Eric Gentry comes in from Arizona State. That's a really good get. I think Shane Lee is also pretty good, you know, and Romello Height, you know, those are also pretty good gets. I think the linebackers, again, like also with what they have, you know, existing, are fine. They should work out. Man, my questions though, defensive line is like where it turns next, right? Like you don't have a bunch of guys transferring in. Like you're not seeing the kinds of like a Blackman where you really like what they were doing at Colorado. And they're taking like a pretty well-deserved step up, you know, or you see guys like transferring from other really, you know, like top programs. I mean, defensive line, they took a guy from San Jose State. They took a guy from Wyoming. I mean, Solomon Bird was pretty good at Wyoming, but, you know, the Mountain West is a very different animal. They took a guy from Kansas State, and they took a guy from TCU. And that is just a really different – I mean, like, and they had real, real problems up front last year. And that, you know, I mean, I think with, you know, the other, you know, the player that's off to the NFL for them on the defensive line, the other Drake Jackson. Like, this is my biggest area of concern. Like, they've been able to put together depth, right? Like, but it's all of a sudden become like, man, like they really need Corey Foreman to step up, right? Like, he's really got to play like the recruit that they signed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, for good or for worse, I compare USC to Utah because, right, like I think a lot of USC fans want to get them to a point where they're beating Utah. And I think the offense is going to be pretty good. It might be a little shaky in the first year, but like, but the bottom of it is the floor is very high and the ceiling could be very high. Where the defense, it was so bad last year. Like, I don't think they're going to be a sub 100 defense, but they have to make up so much ground so fast that I think the ceiling is going to be pretty low for them. And the basement's going to be higher, if that makes sense. Like, I would be shocked if they had like a top 40 defense coming from 100. Like, that's just a big ask given new coaches, new coaching staff, you know, a bunch of transfers they had to figure out the system, player changeover. I don't know. Would you be surprised if they got to 40?
I mean, the defense is real. Like the tough thing is you can always talk yourself into like the talent at USC and you can say like, oh, good coaching should turn it around. I think in the 30s would be about their ceiling. You know, like it's hard for me to see them like putting it together, like the island, like, cause there's some parts you like, but it's a bit of the island of misfit toys, defensively. Like they've taken some good players. They've also taken, it's not like on offense where it's like they're picking among, you know, like the best transfers available. They are, I mean, USC's done reasonably well for who's available defensively, but It's I think this is a tougher build, and I think Grinch is going to have his hands full here.
Okay. Well, I mean, again, one of the most fascinating teams in the conference, and keep a lookout for Grinch. I'm just curious to see if he can really put it together, because that was the knock on Oklahoma the last couple of years.
Yeah.
That defense get where it needs to. All right, let's leave it there, Rob. This is a good. We only have two more teams to ask basic questions at before we really dive into the season. We have our trap game episode. We haven't gone through each team's schedule. I think there's a lot that we have to look forward to. So stay tuned. We will catch you next week. And thanks for listening.